Meeting of Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:32 p.m. on Thursday, March 12th. Let the record also reflect that we have a quorum. Present today are Vice Chair Coghill and Senator Wilson. And do we have Senator Kawasaki telephonically? All right. Senator Kawasaki may join us telephonically, and I'd also like to note that Senator Costello is still out recovering. Like to recognize Senator Keel has joined us. Today we have the amazing Carrie Cooper-Ryder from Senate Records, and my staff, Dustin Ellsbury, and our moderator. Thank you for all your work. Please turn off your cell phone, silence them. Today we have four items on the agenda. SB 183, Abandoned Vehicles, Private Property, sponsored by Senator Keel. SJR 14, Constitutional Amendment, Votes Needed for Veto Override, sponsored by the Senate Judiciary Committee. And SB 210, License Plates, Specialty Organizations, sponsored by Senator Costello. And SB 209, Driver's Licenses and Identification Cards for Inmates, sponsored by Senator Keel. We'll see how far we can get on these bills. Our plan is to get to public testimony and take public testimony on all four of them. All right, let's get started with SB 183, Abandoned Vehicles, Private Property, sponsored by Senator Keel. Senator, if you and your staff could come up, and would also like to note that we first heard this on March 5th. Since then, Senator Keel distributed answers and to the questions that were previously asked by committee members. Thank you for providing that information, Senator Keel. Please put yourself on the record and pick up where you left off.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jesse Keel, representing Senate District 2. Happy to answer any further questions that the committee may have. As a very, very brief reminder, Senate Bill 183 shortens the amount of time that a private property owner has to play host to a vehicle abandoned on his or her property before they can start the legal process of providing notice to the owner, last owner of record, and any lien holders to get title for the dubious privilege of then disposing of a vehicle somebody left on your land.
Thank you, Senator Keel. I'd also like to note that Joanne Olson, the interim director of DMV, is also with us for questions in the Anchorage office. Do we have any questions from members of the committee? All right. Well, we will open it up for public testimony. Thank you very much, Senator Keel. We appreciate it. All right, we'll open up public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on SB 183? All right, seeing none, we have none online. We're going to close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed. Seeing no further questions, is there any questions from members of the committee? What is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 183, version M, the CS for Senate Bill 183, State Affairs version M, from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying zero fiscal note.
Any objection? Seeing no objection, SB 183, version 31, LS0587-M moves out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. All right, we'll go back on the record. Up next is SJR 14, Constitutional Amendment, Votes Needed for Veto Override. This is our second hearing on this resolution. We first heard this measure on February 25th. Senator Coghill, please put yourself on the record and go ahead and begin your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Coghill from Senate Seat B. And I know last time we heard this, I didn't give a really in-depth reason. I just laid out what I thought were the policy calls for the Senate joint resolution. It really comes down to a balance of power. And I know there are many people that feel like that is a policy call specifically aimed at this governor. And it is absolutely not the case. It is true this governor highlighted the issue. And so I would like to at least put two or three more things on the record at this point, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, the governor has a lot of authority in Alaska, and we already talked about many of the things that he has the authority to do, including appoint an attorney general and all the heads of the departments. It's also true that the people of Alaska put separation of powers. For example, there are some things that he can do in heads of state, but only according to law. And according to law is expected that it would be legislative requirements. And that is shot through the whole, actually, the whole Article 2 and Article 3. So, but what I'd like to do is I'd like to bring a couple of articles to mind. For example, what I was talking about in Article 3, Section 16, the governor has the authority to, I'll just read it if that's okay with you. I'm skipping down half through Article 3, Chapter 16, Article 3, Section 16, sorry. It says the governor is responsible for the faithful execution of laws. And in the legislative powers, all lawmaking authority is given to the legislature. And so as it goes through, it talks about how there are the balance of powers between the legislature and the governor. One of the powers that the governor has that is really strong is he can actually compel us to meet and put an issue before us. Sometimes we don't even get to decide the issue. And the reason I'm going through this ladder is I think some people misunderstand that the legislature wants to usurp the authority of the governor. The crafters of the Constitution did put a finely balanced issue in here. But one of the articles that is right at the beginning of the Constitution is that all power belongs to the people. And there's three ways the people express their authority in Alaska. They can vote for legislatures, they can vote for the governor, and they can propose amendments to our laws through initiative. And what they can't do, though, is they can't propose spending things, the appropriations. And so that is left to the legislature. So when you boil all this down, it really comes down to the balance of power between the governor to propose a budget and the legislature to put a budget forward. The governor can say no. And the interesting thing about what the governor gets to do is he gets probably a veto action that is unique in the United States. And I would just like to read one section in Article 2, Section 15. The governor may by veto may veto bills passed by the legislature. He may veto, strike, or reduce items in appropriation bills. That is a unique authority. Even Congress doesn't have that authority to the degree that we have it here. So this unique authority is pretty significant, and the rule to overrule the governor at this point is three quarters, and I would propose two thirds as plenty. And the reason is because it became apparent to me that a governor with a minority of the legislature can overrule the primary policy objective of the legislature. And so I think that became evident. Try to put the shoe on the other foot. If you had a governor who at 51% of the vote in Alaska and had 25% of the legislature could move an agenda forward against three quarters of the rest of Alaska's will by voting in their elected officials is a very, very high bar, the highest in the United States. And I think the issues last year brought it to light. This is not against him. It is just it became apparent that if the shoe was on the other foot, and this is not about caucuses. This is about, and even last year it came to light, it was really about how many votes you can get to substantiate what is a major policy call of the people of Alaska, and that is their budget. That's their annual policy call. And so the governor has significant rights in it. And that balance of power, in my view, got tipped pretty far. One of the other things, did you know that the governor has the right to declare martial law? But the governor has to have the concurrence of the legislature. Now, that is a significant policy call that the legislature gets to weigh in on with a majority vote, pure and simple. So the governor can declare martial law with just a concurrence of the majority of the legislature, and yet it takes three quarters to override a single line item in the major policy call that that legislature has this year. I just wanted to put that on the table as a policy call that may be worth considering. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. And just to clarify for the folks at home, you mean martial law, if the governor declares it, just needs 50% of the legislative body plus one vote.
Right.
Whereas
override. Any line item that he vetoes requires three-quarters of the legislature.
Three-quarters of the whole legislature. Okay.
So I just wanted to put it in perspective that these are the constitutional principles we have to consider as we move forward, and I think it's worthy of consideration, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. All right, we're going to move on to public testimony. All right, public testimony on SJR 14 is now open. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify?
And Mr. Chairman, just for what it's worth, I did not call people to testify today, primarily because I knew I was going to be out here at 4:30, so I did not go looking for people to testify, just for what it's worth.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Seeing none in the room, I don't see anybody online. We're going to close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed on SJR 14, and I think what we're going to do at this point is hold this bill and take it up at a later date. All right, with that, we will move on to SB 210, license plates and specialty organizations. I'd like to invite Tom Wright, Chief of Staff, to Senator Mia Costello to come forward. Please put yourself on the record, sir, and walk us through the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tom Wright. I'm staff to Senator Costello, who, as you alluded to, is out right now and hopefully will be returning soon. Senate Bill 210 basically does one thing. It turns over specialty license plate powers over to the Division of Motor Vehicles rather than the legislature having to pass a bill each year for specialty license plates. We've had eight bills since 2009 that authorized specialty license plates, and in some cases multiple bills were put together in one bill. And for example, in the 27th legislature, they had four bills rolled into one authorizing six specialty plates. For this to go through, DMV must adopt regulations to take over this process, and that'd be for the issuance of special plates or specialty plates that are sponsored by an organization that's based within the state and is tax exempt under a 501c3. And is an Alaska chapter of a national organization that's tax-exempt, the Department of the State or a municipality within the state. An entity that requests a plate through DMV has to submit an application, pay an application fee, pay the cost of developing and issuing the specialty plate, and may be charged a fee for issuance of the specialty plate in addition to any registration fees. And that's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Do we have any questions from committee members? Senator Coghill.
Thank you. So first of all, if there is a specialty plate that has a designation for a nonprofit, they would still keep what statutorily is required, or would this turn this all over to them to figure out the division of that cost?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Coghill, the statutes would remain in place, you know, for the plates that have already been established. And if someone wants to do something like Senator Stevens is doing with the Council on the Arts, the legislature can still take that up and amend that if they wish.
That's all I wanted to know, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. So this is essentially giving the DMV the ability to create plates. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, why did you bring the bill forward? What's the purpose of the bill?
Mr. Chairman, it seems like year after year, according to Senator Costello, that we have to deal with license plate bills. And quite frankly, the legislature, even though each bill is important to each sponsor and to each group, you know, there are other things the legislature really should be spending more time on.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
So that is true. I've been here for a while, and just about every session we have some license bill. But it is true that we get to public debate them, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So help me understand what you think might be the vetting process that DMV would go through on what is appropriate and how they would vet them, much like we have in committee.
I'll just mention that we do have Joanne Olson, the interim director from DMV, on the phone as well as Benjamin Brown, Alaska Council on the Arts, for questions.
So, Mr. Chairman, if he wants to defer to him, that's fine. I'd like to know how the sponsor anticipates this, and then we can go to DMV.
All right, Mr. Wright.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Coghill, I think Joanna Olson may be able to explain this a little bit better than I, but I'll take a shot at it. The Division of Motor Vehicles would have to, you know, have a standard plate from which they'd work. And then, you know, the design, so on and so forth, would have to, you know, they'd have to work with the organization that is requesting the plate. Now, as far as content and whatnot, DMV would have authorization over that, just like they do right now, over, you know, the wording on the plates, so on and so forth. And, you know, what is actually, you know, on specialty plates. Well, for example, I have a plate. This is COS, and there's a couple of variations on that, but I won't get into that in this committee, Mr. Chairman. But you know, they do have the authority when someone requests a plate, you know, with specialty lettering, whether or not that is considered, I don't want to say obscene, but just not in good taste.
The appropriateness. And Mr. Chairman, if I could ask
Senator Coghill.
Maybe the DMV already has a very good vetting system that isn't going to be impacted by this bill, but I'd like to know that.
I would, too. Ms. Olson, did you hear the question? If so, could you please put yourself on the record and respond?
This is Joanne Olson, Interim Director for the Division of Motor Vehicles, and through the chair, organizations that are denied a plate, you know, that has been reported to us, it could be offensive or inappropriate. We do have an administrative hearing process that they could go through.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's really what I want to know. This doesn't affect that, and I just wanted to be that very clear on this, because I think this is a good idea.
I would also like your opinion, Ms. Olson, if you could just tell us what your thoughts are on this proposal.
I think it would save a lot of time for the legislature. But at the same time, it would allow organizations, you know, nonprofit organizations, the opportunity to put out their plates that people do support and would support at least their cause. And it would simplify the process for us, because we could come up with a standard template and then add on whatever the organizations decide to choose. The cost varies depending on the type of color and the design that they choose to use. So we could kind of keep it pretty simple, you know, but still address the needs of the different organizations.
Okay. We have a question from Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you. How many licensed vehicles in the state of Alaska do we have?
I don't know that right off, but I could get that back for you.
Okay. I only asked because it seems that we have 40 types, and maybe have the number of specialized plates that we have in our state, or total license plate numbers, but I think we're at the 40 or 41.
Through the chair, currently we have 92 total unique plate styles offered.
I'm sorry. And out of that 92, would it be possible, if you can get us a percentage of each plate that has been bought or offered in the past, I don't know, 5, 10 years?
I could do that. I'll go, excuse me, through the chair. I will go back through my research and get that provided to you.
Yeah, Senator Wilson.
Yeah, then I would agree with the intent of the sponsor of the bill that if we have 92 specialty plates that all require legislation, that seems like a lot of legislative hours that have been spent on specialty plates. That could have been other hours of dealing with our other larger issues that we have as state business.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Please.
The sponsor of the bill, Senator Casella, does not want to make light, you know, of people who passed sponsored prior legislation for specialty plates. But, again, as Senator Wilson pointed out, there are 92 different variations of plates now in the state, and I don't DMV is very well practiced at helping with design and whatnot, and I don't know how many more specialty plates, you know, can be issued or will be requested, but again, this takes the burden off the legislature and turns it over to DMV, and plus, according to the fiscal note, it is a revenue enhancer.
Mr. Chairman, on the fiscal note?
Yes, Senator Coghill.
So we have been charging different fees. This would standardize them to $100. Is that what it is?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, I think Ms. Olson would probably be better qualified to answer that than I.
Ms. Olson, Mr. Chairman, if we could have Ms. Olson.
Yes, Ms. Olson, did you hear the question? If you could please put yourself back on the record.
Ms. Joanne Olson, through the chair, could you repeat the question, please?
So I see in the bill that the fiscal note shows, the actual bill says that it's going to require $100. Does that apply to all the specialty plates, or is that a new standard is what I'm looking at. Is that $100 a new standard?
Through the chair, as the bill is written, they've added a section LL, and it does state in there that they would be charging $100 for the plate and for subsequent replacement plates. So that would be the standard fee.
And that, Mr. Chairman, if I might ask.
Senator Coghill, please.
And that, at this point, would be upping the standard, basically, if I understand correctly. It looked like some plates were 30 and some were 50, and this would just align them all to $100. Do I understand that correctly?
Ms. Olson? Chair, that's correct as the bill is written.
Okay. I just wanted to know that. And I think if we're going to give you the authority, then if people understand what the cost all the time is, Mr. Chairman, I think that's totally appropriate.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. This would be for... This wouldn't be a fee increase for all the plates currently. This would be something that was cycled in for new plates. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Tom Wright, for the record again, that is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Another question on line, well, starting on line 4 of page 1, it says special request specialty organization plates. The department shall adopt regulations to allow for the issuance of specialty request specialty organization registration plates sponsored by an organization that is based in this state and is tax exempt under 26 USC 501C, is an Alaska chapter of a national organization that is tax exempt under the same statute, is a department of the state, or as a municipality of the state, do you think that might be a little restricting? For example, if it were another military medal in the future, that would be excluded here. Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, we're willing to, you know, again, to make sure that we're not going to not be able to honor our military members. If that needs to be expanded, then, you know, I probably need to look at that a little more.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wright. Yeah, I also agree with the intent of this bill. I think it would help to have folks who were specialized in these types of plates. Definitely. Yes, yeah, Senator Coghill.
Totally agree. It would be interesting to me in the Northwest Pacific how many specialty states and other plates in other states, what they charge for them. it would be interesting to see, because I think registration fees and license fees are pretty significant. I think we're quite low in comparison to them. And it's just something to consider when this goes to finance. My guess is they may consider that.
Mr. Chairman, that is up to the Finance Committee, because the bill, if it makes it to the Finance Committee, it'll be under their purview.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Is there anything you'd like to add? Any other questions from committee members as well? Anything?
Mr. Chairman, I have nothing more.
Not my amendment to up it, by the way.
Okay. Thank you again, Mr. Wright. We're going to open it up for public testimony. All right, public testimony on SB 209 is now open. Do we have members in the room that would like to testify? No, it doesn't look like we have any online. We do have Mr. Brown online. Mr. Brown, would you, do you wish to provide public testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to be available to answer any questions that might relate to the artistic license plate program. I think Mr. Wright did a good job, as did the interim director of DMV, making it clear that this bill would be prospective in effect and not retroactive, and so therefore it would not change, assuming Senate Bill 169 goes into effect, it would not change the artistic license plate fee structure. And so I would be happy to answer any questions. We are definitely interested, as Mr. Chairman, members of your committee know, because I testified on Senate Bill 169 a couple of times, we're interested in a different pricing point because of the tremendous demand for our license plates, and we wouldn't want to have a one-size-fits-all price frustrate that goal. But because this bill would be prospective, it wouldn't have that effect. So other than that, I guess I would say generally we at the State Council on the Arts also want to see state government be as efficient as possible, and this is very likely a step in that direction. So it seems like a very good idea, and Senator Costello and Mr. Wright are to be commended for bringing it before the committee. But I think anything that I would have needed to clarify was already taken care of. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Brown. I'll ask again, anyone in the room here to testify on SB 210? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. And I think what we're going to do is Mr. Wright, and again, I appreciate this bill and the sponsor, please relay that. I would like to clean up some of the language to make sure that it's inclusive. I think we'll bring that back again, hopefully pretty soon here. So thank you again, sir. Okay. All right, now we're going to move on to SB 209, driver's licenses and identification cards for inmates. I'd like to invite Senator Jesse Keel and his staff, Kelvin Zulo, to come forward and introduce yourselves. Please put yourselves on the record and walk us through the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Appreciate you hearing the bill today. For the record, I am Jesse Keel, Senator for District Q. I'm joined by Calvin Zulo of my office with the Ted Stevens Legislative Internship Program through UAS. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 209 is an attempt to improve the success of people who get out of Alaska's prisons. And success means getting a job, getting housed, not committing new crimes. That's a goal I think we all share, regardless of any political philosophy. It's not easy when an Alaskan gets out of prison. There are a huge number of requirements, and we put them in the law for good reason. We require people to stay clean and sober most of the time. We require people to seek and find work, to seek and find housing, and so on from there. Mr. Chairman, just about all those things you have to do to succeed when you get out of prison, to succeed, frankly, in society, require an ID. And not everyone gets out of prison with an ID in their pocket. Certainly there are folks who go into our institutions with a valid driver's license or a valid ID card. They get out before it expires. But folks who serve a longer term of imprisonment might have that ID or that driver's license expire. And frankly, some folks aren't particularly functional when they go into our institutions. It's part of why they're there, and they may not have had a license or an ID when they went in. The Department of Corrections, Mr. Chairman, recognizes this problem and has been working on it, and I very much appreciate the efforts they've been making through the years. Today, what they provide for folks who leave the institutions is something called a face sheet. It has an inmate's, or rather former inmate's, picture on it and their name. And the person can take that to the DMV and get an ID card. Or if applicable, I believe they can get a driver's license at the state's cost, at the Department of Corrections cost. It's an imperfect solution, and we can do better. I think we should for a couple of reasons. First of all, as we've talked with folks in the reentry community, folks who try to help inmates succeed when they get out, there have been some problems with those face sheets working well and folks needing to go back and forth. It also takes half a day at the DMV when we would like those inmates to be meeting with their probation or parole officer and beginning the process of doing the things we want them to do, getting to treatment, starting to apply for jobs. It also means that you leave the DMV with a paper temporary license or ID, and you need a mailing address to get your permanent card. Well, folks coming right out of prison generally, well, in many cases, don't have that mailing address. They don't have a place yet. If inmates who serve a significant term in prison walk out the gate with an ID card or a driver's license in their pocket, it is one fewer hurdle to doing the things we need them to do so that they don't create another victim and go back. Get that job, get housed, get into treatment, keep clean, take their urinalyses. You have to prove who you are to make sure nobody else is taking that test on your behalf. Mr. Chairman, that laundry list of things that take an ID, we can take a half a day off the list of getting to work on those. That's the point behind Senate Bill 209, and I welcome any questions from the committee.
Senator, thank you, Senator Keel. Senator Wilson.
I have a litany of questions, Mr. Chair, but I will try to see if I can combine them here. So the current process now, and I'm looking through the note, that there's no note to this bill, and how will this address for the concerns for real ID? I mean, eventually, that some of those folks that are serving more than 120 days are probably still going to be on probation or parole when they release if they committed a felony. But for those that may want to look at traveling out of the state and they think that they now have an ID that they can travel with, because you have to have that mailing address, you got to provide all the additional proof of information. How will a real ID be handled?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In answer to Senator Wilson's question, the bill as originally introduced does not, as it's before you today, does not cover a real ID. And we've heard some requests from the folks in the reentry community that we look at expanding it. The Department of Corrections has actually begun to look at that. I'm not prepared to answer for them or for the DMV on real ID. I do think it's worth noting that most of the folks who are going to be on probation or parole for a while probably have some restrictions on their travel. Their PO is probably going to have serious conversations with them about leaving town. So it may well be that those folks need to pursue a real ID later on once they've gotten into housing and gotten some work. But that's certainly something that is worth looking at because if we can solve that additional hurdle, that's a benefit.
Yes, Senator Wilson. Well, just a real quick kind of following up on that, they wouldn't be, if they do have travel restrictions, they wouldn't be able to get a real ID anyways if they didn't have their birth certificate, Social Security card, and bills or letters. So it would take quite some time, right, without – we have somebody from the – maybe that's Ms. Olson, did you hear the question? Could you please put yourself back on the record and – respond to that.
This is Joanne Olson. Through the chair, could you repeat the question, please?
So we had a question about how Real ID might affect inmates and folks in reentry into society, and so kind of Real ID is new here, and so we're all kind of trying to walk through this. And I'm wondering if an inmate is coming out and they're not local, they don't have their birth certificate or social security card, they wouldn't qualify for Real ID anyways. Will they still be able to get a regular ID in the future? Is that an option? And how might this affect this bill?
If they currently have an existing record, it's not a problem for them to get a non-compliant federal ID. If they want to get the Real ID, we will work with them and provide them the information they would need and who they can contact to obtain a certified birth certificate, the Social Security card, or whatever the requirements is at that time.
And so I don't know who knows the answer to this, but so they still would qualify for a non-compliant ID card, and that would work for the purposes of all the state agencies that they might have to do business with. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Olson. Senator Wilson?
Yeah, I have, a partial question then for Ms. Olson. And thank you for being online for three bills today, Ms. Olson. If you already currently have a Real ID, you can just go ahead and continue without providing the new information or how the updates work for that?
Through the chair, if you currently have a Real ID, you could come in and obtain a duplicate because we've already verified the information.
Thank you. And I guess as a follow-up to the sponsor then,
follow-up.
My question is that we have a lot of folks that are in pretrial, and our pretrial population is the majority of our prison population. I'm looking for DOT to nod or give a sign. They're nodding, saying yes. And so most folks in pretrial haven't been charged, and you know, if the rate of success, or about 30% of our felony folks are walking out the door without a charge. And they could be held in pretrial because we have a problem with folks affording for bail. And thus, would this bill still happen for the folks that are in pretrial, not necessarily within DOC's full custody, or is it just for the folks that have already been charged?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just ask the senator a question. You mean convicted?
Yes, convicted. Yes, sorry. Is this bill applying for all convictions or folks that are just in DOC custody as a pretrial folks that may get out without having a permanent criminal record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer Senator Wilson, the bill currently applies to those folks who've been sentenced and serve at least 120 days. That, in working with the Department of Corrections, that gives them the time they need to work with DMV to get a state ID or a state driver's license issued and back to property so that the inmate has it when they walk out. For folks in pretrial, it's really tough to know when they're leaving. And the goal here was to make this a workable program, something that the department could, practically speaking, implement when the bill goes into effect.
Thank you.
Senator Coghill.
It's complicated because you have some in pretrial who have been convicted who are there on another charge and who may get out in that 120 days. So I just wonder how that would work. But I'm with you on getting an ID on this because they can't get any kind of assistance without an ID. So I found that out real clear. So there is some complications, and I don't know what those would be, though, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Could you walk us through how this would work? How does the DMV come to the correctional institution? Do they set up their own? Walk me through kind of the intent of how this might work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, because the bill applies to the sentenced population, we have a pretty stable and pretty known group of inmates that we'd be working with. And it may be best, actually, for the Department of Corrections to talk about the practical details of exactly how they'll do this. The practical effect you know, of not necessarily applying. It's one of the benefits of not applying this statute to the real IDs is that for a state of Alaska ID, we would deem it legally sufficient that the Department of Corrections knows who they've got behind the bars. We've fortunately never had a problem with locking up the wrong person in Alaska. So we do know the identity, and we can issue an ID card that's sufficient. For the precise details of who takes the picture when, I think the department might be best to give you that. they know their institutions better than I will, and I don't want to lead the committee astray.
Okay, so thank you, Senator Keel. So the onus then would be on the Department of Corrections to make this happen for their inmates. Have we heard from the Department of Corrections yet? Or are they? Could we hear from the department? I'm sorry, I don't have a list of folks that were here and available. So I would very much like to hear from the Department of Corrections, unless we have any other questions for Senator Keel right now. Yeah, so, okay, thank you, Senator Keel. If we could bring the Deputy Commissioner up, please, and put yourself on the record and give us your perspective.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kelly Howell. I am the Special Assistant to the Commissioner and Legislative Liaison for the Department of Corrections.
Good afternoon. My name is Laura Brooks, and I'm the Division Manager for the Division of Health and Rehabilitation Services.
Thank you so much for being here. Maybe if we could get your perspective first, Ms. Howell.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Thank you. First of all, we do want to, for the record, just state that Senator Keel's office did reach out, the sponsor's office did reach out to the Department of Corrections to ensure that this is something that the department could do that was workable for the department. So we do appreciate that. In terms of the process and how it would work, I believe it's Section 3 of the bill that does require the Department of Corrections and the Department of Administration to work together in good faith to ensure that an inmate that's leaving the institution does have a state identification prior to release. So the process of that occurring, Ms. Brooks may be able to speak to the logistics of that.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, so currently that piece of paper that we provide to the inmates when they leave, what we would provide to the DMV would be something very similar to that. We would provide them with a photo, send all of that information to the DMV, and then the DMV would actually mail back to the Department of Corrections that hard ID for us to distribute to the inmate.
Okay, thank you. And you have the capacity to do this?
Mr. Yes. Chair, currently we do. We have, as I said, that process is already in place for us to have that printout that's given, and we also have the ability to update individuals' photographs that we would initially do at booking. We update those photos periodically, and we could, although we haven't worked out all of the details on how that would, you know, detail out in the end, we certainly could update those photos, you know, given the length of time that has passed or changes to the inmate's appearance as necessary.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Wilson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As the DOC upgraded their cameras, as the DMV upgraded their cameras?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, I'm not sure how recent the cameras have been updated. We could check on that and let you know, but I'm not certain at all of our different facilities how current that is.
Okay. And
yes, Senator Wilson.
That's another question here. This bill would then require anyone having a prison sentence of 120 days or more to be able to leave with an ID, but yet you still have a zero note. So do you expect a zero increase of inmates wanting to, as currently, I'm not sure how many inmates now you, that the DMV, that the department pays for the application fee for the identification card and with that mailing, but do you expect to have a zero net increase of additional inmates asking for this?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, I'll take a stab at that. Again, this is Kelly Howell for the record. So we did do a little bit of research in preparation. Not every offender that releases is going to need an ID. They may already have an ID. It was approximately 12% of the releasing population that requested an ID or the paper to take to the DMV to get an ID. So whether it increases or not, we're not certain, but we do believe that we have the capacity to take that on. If it does seem to become something that's more than we anticipated, we could certainly look at that in future years. But at this point, we believe that it's something that we can definitely handle with our existing staffing and budget.
Senator Wilson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was trying to get a number of how many folks currently do this and trying to get a guesstimate of how many people that this could potentially increase to of folks. And I know that's a hard sort of what-if scenario, but it's hard to make a decision on that. And maybe when this bill goes up to the next level, we can dig down and deeper into the financials of this, but I'll defer to another committee.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. This bill does go to Finance Committee next. Any other questions? Any other comments from either of you?
I don't think so, Mr. Chair.
None from me, Mr. Chair.
Oh, thank you very much. I guess I have one more question. Do you currently already have a working relationship with DMV, and if so, in what capacity?
Thank you for asking that question, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, this is Kelly Howell. Yes, the Department of Corrections and the Department of Administration do already work closely together. We've been in conversations regarding the Real ID issue and how we can help facilitate that occurring. So we have that relationship already, as well as the current existing process. So, yes, we communicate with DOA and have been working with them on these very issues.
So you wouldn't have DOC employees waiting in line at the DMV or anything to I'm just – okay, thank you. I would like to hear from the DMV. Ms. Olson, you're still on the phone, and thanks again for being here. Again, could you give us your perspective on any thoughts you might have, any sort of challenges or opportunities related to this proposal?
Actually, we don't see any issues working with Department of Corrections. They've been really good working with us, and we've been trying to accommodate as well.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. All right, I appreciate your testimony. I will say I think I recently attended the reentry simulation with Senator Keel, and I have a feeling that this probably stems from some of our experiences in the reentry simulation. I think you both were there, if I recall. And I will tell you, it was sort of a wake up call to see just kind of briefly and in a controlled environment what folks might experience as they reintegrate into the civilian population outside of correctional institutions. And it was very eye opening, some of the challenges that they face. So I appreciate the intent of this bill. And I think what we'll do is we'll open public testimony. I think we have a couple folks wanting to testify, so I'd like to thank you again. All right, testimony on SB 209, public testimony is now open. Do we have any folks in the room who would like to testify? All right, we have Linda Setterberg online. Ms. Setterberg, can you hear me? If so, could you please put yourself on the record and give us 2 minutes of your thoughts?
Yeah, this is Linda Setterberg, and I am from Fairbanks, Alaska, 109 Niffin Road. And I'm also the Fairbanks Reentry Coalition Coordinator, and have done several simulations, actually, in the Fairbanks area and attended one in Anchorage. And it's our experience that that getting an ID or driver's license is a barrier for some of our clients that we have here, and that getting an ID before they get out of a correctional facility would really expedite their experience in reentry. So we're in support of SB 209. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Setterberg, for your testimony. All right, is there any folks who wish to testify in the room? We had somebody listed on here, but it doesn't have a name, so I just want to make sure. All right, we're going to close public testimony. Public testimony on SB 209 is now closed. At this time, I think what we'll do is hold this bill and take a look at the language and bring it up hopefully at a soon date in the near future. All right, our next meeting will be held Tuesday, March 17th at 3:30. We'll be sending out the agenda for next week by the end of the day. Thank you again for all your testimony and your participation. This meeting is adjourned at 4:23 p.m.